ladies and gentlemen. I'm Alfred Addisk, and this is the This is the Financial Survival for Wednesday evening, 25th day of October, year of our Lord 2017. James Corbett should be joining me after the first break, calling in from Japan. That's James Corbett from the Corbett Report. And before we get to James, first market report, then some comments of my own, and hope you enjoy the program. Gold is up 90 cents today to $1,278.20 per ounce. Silver is up 2 cents to $17.03 an ounce. Platinum is up $1 to $927. Palladium is down 4 to $961. And we get down into the U.S. dollar index was down, well, it's down this evening, 0.04 to 93.60 for the U.S. dollar index. Crude oil is off a penny to $52.17 per barrel. Dow Jones Industrial Average is down 112 points to 23,329. NASDAQ is down 35 points to 6,564. New York Stock Exchange off 68 to 12,337. Standard & Poor's 500 is down 12 to 2,557. Let's see what we've got to, what have we got here to discuss this evening. Here's something, well, let me do this other one first. It might take a little longer. Do the second one first, then maybe we'll get back to the first one. Let me scroll down. Here's the article from CNBC. Now, this is an interesting article. This is interesting not for what it says, but what it doesn't say. And it's a 907-word long article. And it's talking about China's new currency plan, which is going to be implemented before the end of this year. And the headline is, China has grand ambitions to dethrone the dollar. It may make a powerful move this year. Now, this is important because it is supposed to take place, it's scheduled to take place before the end of this year. That means in the next 2 months. This does not mean that the world is going to come to an end before the before January 1st of 2018. But it means a peculiar ball may start rolling in the next 60 days or so. And if it does, there's a real high probability it's going to change the world significantly, at least in my opinion. And I'm sure there's other people who agree with me. It says the plan to price, here's what they're talking about. The plan is to price oil in yuan, that's the Chinese currency, using a gold-backed futures contract in Shanghai. That's the overall, that is an introduction to the article. The new strategy, let me make a note of something there. The new strategy is to enlist the energy market's help. Beijing may introduce a new way to price oil in coming months, but unlike the contracts based on the U.S. dollar that currently dominate global markets and also lay the foundation for the petrodollar, which is the main reason that the dollar is still the world reserve currency, which is the main reason that it is deemed to have something like intrinsic value when no such thing is true. China intends to enlist the energy market's help. They're going to price oil in yuan. But if you sell oil to China, China intends to pay you in yuan. And if you like the yuan, China produces a lot of products, so you can turn around and take. So say you bought you sold $1 billion worth of oil to China. They give you $1 billion worth of yuan. You can take those yuan and send them right back to China and say, I'd like to trade these in for new cars or boats or trucks or computers or whatever it is that China's making that you want to buy with yuan. So they give you a yuan for your crude oil. You give them their yuan. You send it right back to them for their computers or whatever it else is that they're manufacturing that you want to see brought into your country. But if you don't want the yuan because you don't really want to buy Chinese products, you have other things in mind, what they've done is they've set up a system where you'll be able to take the yuan, and instead of trading it for Chinese products, or maybe to giving it to other nations who are willing to accept yuan, and they'll use it to trade with China. But if you don't want the yuan, you can trade the yuan for gold. Right? China set this up where you can take the yuan. They will pay you yuan for crude oil. And when you get the yuan, if you don't want the yuan, let China know, and they'll see that you get gold instead. Now, this is an extraordinary strategy. They have combined both gold and crude oil along with a fiat currency. We have used a paper currency that was backed by gold for most of American history. Since the 1970s, we used a paper currency that was backed by crude oil. Last 40 years, it's been a petrodollar. If anyone wanted to buy crude oil anywhere in the world, they basically had to first have dollars. The oil-producing nations guaranteed they would only sell their crude oil for dollars, which meant anyone who needed crude oil would have to pay dollars. They'd have to get dollars in the first place in order to get crude oil. It meant that the dollar was implicitly backed by crude oil. That's changing, all right? I remember the main reason we invaded Iraq went after Saddam Hussein. He had the audacity to start selling Iraqi crude for something other than U.S. dollars. And we went after him, and we got him, hanged him, in order to protect the almighty dollar. But even that didn't work. By the time we were done in Iraq, other nations had begun to sell their crude oil for currencies other than dollars, and the dollar's hegemony as the only currency that could be used to purchase crude oil on the international market, that has been eroded. It's still the dominant currency used to purchase crude oil, but it is no longer there is no longer a requirement. If you're producing crude oil, you can probably sell that crude oil for currencies other than the dollar. So here comes China. They understand how important it is to the United States economy, and particularly to support the U.S. military, that the dollar be the world reserve currency. And the reason, again, that the dollar stays the world reserve currency is that it has been the world's petrodollar. Well, when China ties their yuan to petroleum, crude oil, they are challenging the dollar's status as petrodollar. They're saying, we're a petrol currency too. You can get petroleum products with yuan. If that's all they were doing, nobody'd pay much attention. That's not remarkable, and everybody'd sit back and say, we don't need the yuan to back up oil, to be backed by oil or to buy oil or whatever. We'll just stick with the dollar because we've been doing it for the last 40 years and we're used to it and it'll work out fine. There would be nothing extraordinary about trying to unseat the dollar's status as petrodollar, petrocurrency, and try to connect the yuan to crude oil and make a petro yuan, maybe. To associate the yuan with crude oil. Nothing really remarkable there. But when you say, we want to pay for our crude oil with yuan, and you can take the yuan and you can buy Chinese products, which is good for both our countries. We buy your petroleum with yuan. You use our yuan to buy our computers. Good deal. Fair. They say, but one more thing. If you don't want our computers, if you don't want our products, we will arrange for you to purchase gold with your yuan. Now we have a currency that is implicitly backed by gold. They're trying to use paper currency, paper yuan, to buy crude oil. All right? That's not remarkable. It's not amazing. It's not astonishing. Nothing big happening there, exactly. But they're saying that every yuan note is going to be implicitly backed by gold. Not Chinese gold. They're going to buy the gold on the open market, but they'll get the gold to give you gold instead of the yuan. It means that the yuan, people will soon be saying, when they talk about the Chinese yuan, they'll be saying it's good as gold. Just the way we did when I was a kid when we talked about paper dollars. They're good as gold. People all over the world took dollars because they were backed by gold when I was a kid. And they said, the paper dollars are good as gold. You can always trade them in for gold. The yuan, maybe before the end of this year, is going to be implicitly backed by gold. And they're going to start trying to arrange the transactions and make this thing move from the world of, from the level of theory into practical reality. They're going to try to give yuan to oil producing nations. And if they take them and they can get gold for them, then people who are selling other commodities like corn, all right, or wheat or pork bellies or whatever, they'll say, sure, I'll take yuan. They're good as gold. If I take yuan, I can get gold for them. They're good as gold. It's what our currency used to be, and it laid the foundation for our currency, our paper currency, our paper and digital currency to become the world's reserve currency, even though it wasn't backed by gold. Right? When we finally backed by, it was backed, when it was no longer backed by gold, we moved into petroleum, but it was no longer directly backed by gold, it was indirectly backed by petroleum. Now the Chinese are doing something like that. They're having an indirect, their currency will be indirectly backed by the world's gold. How this is going to work out remains to be seen, but if the Chinese have dotted their I's and crossed their T's, this is going to be an extraordinary strategy, because I expect the American people, and not necessarily the American people, but the people of the world, are going to flee from the fiat dollar, which is backed by nothing, to the yuan, which is at least implicitly backed by gold. The article that I was talking about that got me off on this subject is from, what is this, CNBC? Yeah, CNBC. 907-word article. The word gold appears in the article two times. Gold is the key to this whole story. And they've only used it once. They said the plan is to price the oil and yuan using a gold-backed futures contract in Shanghai. And then down below, that was the first line in the article. And then they said the plan is to price oil and yuan using a gold-backed futures contract. They basically duplicate that first sentence. This is the only reference. These are the only two references to the word gold in the 907 words. And the key to this whole article is the presence of gold. The Chinese have done something that's unprecedented. They are tying their currency to both petroleum, which has been the backing for the U.S. dollar for the last 45, 50 years, and also to gold, which has backed the paper dollar for 200 years. They have combined both gold and petroleum into a single currency, and I think this is going to be a hard thing to beat. It's going to be a hard thing to ignore. I think they're going to be, assuming they go through with it, assuming they establish this, I think they're going to have a currency that is going to be almost impossible to ignore, and I think everyone in the world is going to understand. We are going to be saying, not so long from now, hey, the Chinese yuan, it's good as gold. What all this means is that if the oil-producing nations want to sell their crude oil to China, they can take the Chinese yuan currency in return. I've already explained that. But just in case an oil-producing nation sold its crude to China and China paid with yuan, and the oil-producing nation didn't want to buy Chinese products and therefore didn't want the yuan, then the oil-producing nations could take what they were paid in yuan and use it to purchase physical gold. This means that the yuan will be implicitly backed by gold. It means, again, people will soon be talking about the Chinese yuan and saying it's good as gold. And that means people will quickly flock to the Chinese yuan and flee from the dollar. Doesn't mean the dollar is going to die, but it's going to be diminished. Its value will fall. It will probably see some significant devaluation in the next, who knows, could happen in the next 6 months. I don't know. And that, assuming the Chinese oil, yuan, gold strategy, assuming it's actually implemented, it means the fiat dollar could be inflated to the point of worthlessness. and perhaps even destruction within 2 years and maybe even within 1 year. And all that means that China's oil, yuan, gold strategy poses a mortal threat to the fiat dollar. Now, we invaded Iraq because it posed a mortal threat to the fiat dollar when Saddam Hussein started selling his crude oil for currency, his euros, currencies other than the fiat dollar. And that means, and thus, in the context of China and their new strategy, the U.S. government might consider China's oil, yuan, gold strategy to be an act of war, worthy of a first nuclear strike on China. What's that mean? It means we live in very interesting times. Changing currency, Ron. If the dollar goes down, it's going to be virtually impossible. It's going to be very difficult to extend American power overseas. We're going to have to, I don't know how many foreign military bases we have in this world, but we're going to have to bring a bunch of them back home. We're going to have to stop meddling in everybody's affairs overseas. We're going to have to stop going to war in Iraq and Syria and Iran and the rest. We're going to have to really become a defensive military system rather than an offensive military system. We're going to have to stop being the world's policeman. Our standard of living is going to fall. We're not going to be able to export our inflation. We're going to see our dollar devalued. We're going to see our savings devalued, the value of our bonds devalued. A lot of things are going to happen, and we are going to pay a very serious price if China is able to implement the program that they've planned. And they're supposed to start before the end of this year. It's supposed to be up and running by the end of this year. It may be that they've already tested it out a time or two within, and see how things are working with one or two countries. But it means that we're on the verge. We're on the edge of serious problems. And they could sprout up within the next 6 months. I mean, if China implements this project by the end of November, we could see a significant decline, a devaluation of the dollar by April, May of this next year. And maybe sooner than that. There's no telling how this is going to work out. So, I don't know. It's a big story. It's a spectacular story. It's maybe not easily understood and hard to explain, a little bit hard to explain, because you're tying dollars to petroleum to gold, and it makes for wheels within wheels. But just the same, keep an eye out. This is big, and it may threaten the dollar dramatically. We're going to take a break for a couple of commercial announcements, and when we come back, James Corbett from the Corbett Report will be calling in. James is in Japan, and we should be talking to him in about 3-4 minutes. Please stay tuned to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit csetalkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hi, ladies and gentlemen, I'm Alfred Adisk, and this is Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. Our guest is James Corbett from the CorbettReport.com, C-O-R-B-E-T-T, CorbettReport.com. James puts out some of the best information in terms of intellect, articulation, that you can find on the internet, and his podcasts and videos and text. I don't think he's done any artwork. Have you done the artwork of your own, James?
People would not appreciate my stickman drawings, but no, I think I'll leave that to the professionals.
Well, you got a couple of kids coming up. They'll be able to show you how to handle
it. Already could do as good a job as I do.
Yeah. Hello, James. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. Can't complain.
Good. That's an inside joke there, folks. How's life in Japan?
Well, funny you should ask. Well, we just had a snap election here, as people may have heard about in the maybe in the dying seconds of the newscast. It might have made some attention. But anyway, it didn't really change much in terms of the political situation here in Japan. The LDP party, the ruling party, led by Prime Minister Abe, just won a sweeping mandate to continue more of the same. And the big story of the election here was that there was a new party in town. A new opposition party came up called the Party of Hope that certainly there was some column ink spilled on that that new party and being led by a popular Tokyo governor as a potential challenge to the Abe LDP ruling regime. But I don't think anyone really expected the LDP to lose the election, but they might have expected more of a challenge. As it is, basically this new party just split the opposition vote, as these things tend to go, and the LDP ruling party just continues with an even more sweeping mandate than before to continue with Abenomics and changing the constitution and all of the other stuff they've already been up to for the last several years.
Back when the USSR was still a live entity, they used to have sweeping elections and sweeping victories also. I was wondering, any similarity? Does Japan's sweeping victory, does it sweep as well as the communist sweep?
Well, there's something to that, because although obviously this isn't a one-party system, and there is more than even just the pretense of opposition parties, it ultimately amounts to almost the same thing, because in the entirety of the post-World War II era, the ruling LDP party, the Liberal Democratic Party, has been out of power, I think, twice. Ever for a grand total of maybe 3 or 4 years. Almost the entirety of this period has been essentially a one-party system. And I think this is reflective of the Japanese way. You might kind of upset the boat a little, but certainly not too much. So the idea of a political shakeup in Japan is if they were to overturn Prime Minister Abe as the leader of the party and put a different party leader in, I mean, that's seen as a political change here more so than actually changing the ruling party.
What do you see happening in relation to North Korea?
Well, not a lot in terms of political maneuvering at this point, or diplomatic maneuvering, but we have seen more worrying signs of the potential, anyway, for military escalation. And the latest that you may have heard about, Barksdale Air Force Base, Defense One is reporting that Yes, they are putting the nuclear-armed bombers back on 24-hour ready alert.
Oh, you're talking about the B-52. Right, I thought I was talking about the F-35.
The B-52s, are now on 24-hour alert, which they have not been since the end of the Cold War in 1991. So just another sign that they're trying to flex muscle and, you know, basically show that they're ready for some sort of military end to this crisis, whatever that would look like.
Have you ever seen a B-52 close enough where you can make it out? Do you understand what you're looking at?
No, not that I know of, anyway.
I have on one occasion, and I can remember it just... It was awesome. It was flying, and it was, I don't know, I suppose it was half a mile away. But that thing seemed to practically float in the air. I can remember it curving around, and it was just, it seemed like it was moving so slow you could have jumped on if you were close by. Mm-hmm. And the tail on that thing was massive. It was all dark gray, and my only impression was there goes the angel of death.
Yeah.
That thing was a monster, and that thing's 50 years old.
Yep.
They must have made it out of cast iron or something, because they apparently don't fall apart, at least not up until now. But it is an impressive and fearsome-looking aircraft. I've got an article here on Bitcoin from Cointelegraph. It says, U.S. regulators debate whether Bitcoin is a commodity or a security. That's the headline. And they are talking about a recent... primer that's been published by the Commodities Future Trading Commission. And it says the primer highlights that the definition of commodity in the Commodity Exchanges Act is broad and covers physical commodities like grain, natural resources like gold, and currency or interest rates. Moreover, the CFTC has oversight over derivative contracts, and its jurisdiction is triggered when virtual currencies are used in derivative contracts. And they go on and they say, look, this is, you know, some people say this is, that the Bitcoin is a commodity, and some say it's a security. And some say it's both. What do you think it is?
Well, it's a good question. I think it's ones and zeros. And how is the government going to regulate that? Or how should they regulate that is the question, and the operative question, I guess. Essentially, all that is happening in these Bitcoin transactions is a bunch of ones and zeros are being exchanged online. And to what extent should the government have some role in squashing those types of exchanges? I mean, this goes, I guess, to the fundamental question about the ownership of the economy that is assumed everywhere and implicitly by the very existence of the income tax, let alone any other form of government intervention. The government basically assumes that they own the economy and they allow you to do things within it. So, I don't know, arguing about whether it's a commodity or a security to me is a bit like arguing about whether an angel is dancing on the head of a pin. In an actually free market, we would be able to allow these types of new ideas and technologies to flourish in whatever way they flourish. And what way will Bitcoin be used in a truly free market? Will it be used as a commodity or as a security or in some other way? It's not just an academic question. It's a genuinely exciting question to behold, because you start to look at the different things that are being done, not through the Bitcoin network, but through other cryptocurrencies that are rising up that aren't necessarily even what you would expect them to be. To be used for. Ernest Hancock of Declare Your Independence just had a guest on. They were talking about, I can't remember the name of this new cryptocurrency. I can't remember. I would say it if I remembered. But they were talking about this new cryptocurrency that's being developed. And one of the side things that they mentioned almost in passing as one of the things that this can do is, oh, yeah, in this blockchain, you could send encoded messages to people in a way that they wouldn't be able to not only be able to read it, but not be able to see who you are sending those messages to. And of course, when Ernest Hancock said that, we said, well, hold on, this is more important than the idea of a new cryptocurrency. We already have cryptocurrencies. This is something that could be truly important. All of these things happen as a result of people playing around with these new ideas and seeing what kind of pops out of them. And unfortunately, the government is going to do what it always does. Every single thing that they see is just a nail that needs to be hammered down. And if you hammer it down, then you do not see what that nail could actually do, what it could actually accomplish if left free, which is not really to answer your question, but I think it's the more fundamental part of the question.
I think the issue of whether if we are truly free, why can't we use Bitcoin? That's essentially what you're saying. And the answer is, I mean, the premise for a lot of the things you said is that we are free, so we should be able to. But in fact, the government says, the heck with that. You can think you're free and the rest of that, but Bitcoin is clearly a threat to the government. If people are currency and buy things without using the government, how do they pay taxes?
Exactly, yes. I mean that's ultimately what this comes down to. How do you pay your tribute?
How does the government retain control? This isn't even about the taxes exactly. This is about control. If they let us go out there and be free and just start buying a new computer with some Bitcoin or something like that, the government has lost power.
Exactly right. That's the fundamental underlying issue. But let's give credit to the other side of this debate and what they're saying. Things like the ICO, initial coin offering, which is increasingly being used as a vehicle for fundraising for people online, instead of IPO, initial public offering, where you have to go through an investment bank like Goldman Sachs or whatever to underwrite your IPO to list on a stock exchange and publicly go, you know, with your shares in your company as a way of raising funds. Well, now you can do an ICO. You create a cryptocurrency, you create a coin, and you pre-sale that, or you allow people to mine it or whatever, as a way of raising funds for your organization. This has raised billions of dollars already this year for various companies. And let's not be Pollyanna about this. Absolutely, there are people who are going to be fleeced in this. There are scams going on. People are putting up white papers and getting millions of dollars based on just nonsense, nothing, technically nothing. There are people who are going to be hurt by this. So the question is, well, shouldn't there be regulators stepping in like there is in the securities realm, where they obviously, there's so many ways that these have to be vetted so that it's not just anyone coming along can do an IPO and raise millions of dollars. Well, shouldn't it be the same thing in the cryptocurrency space? But I think this is, again, fundamentally to the point of freedom. If people were allowed to do this kind of crazy willy-nilly, anyone can come along with a white paper and raise millions of dollars, and people are going to be hurt by this, absolutely. But isn't that the point? In the free market, there will be mechanisms developed that arise spontaneously as a result of people getting fleeced and people getting, you know, losing all their money and getting sick of this. There will be things that come along to take the place of that regulatory function that can only be done by government. It must be done by government. No, why can it not be a private and free, freely voluntary thing that comes along that is like an SEC, quote unquote, but for the ICO space, where, for example, I mean, let's look even broader example than this. We have all of these compliance regulations that people have to meet. If they're producing electronics or whatever, you have to get FEC approval. If you're producing drugs for big pharma, you have to get the FDA approval and these types of approval and regulatory bodies. In a free market, you would have not just one authority that, you know, everyone has to comply with. You would have multiple competing agencies, quote unquote, that are doing the same thing, except they're private companies that will put our stamp of approval on this, and we won't put our stamp of approval on that because they don't meet our requirements here. You'd have multiple different competing bodies that would be doing these types of regulatory functions. And the beauty of that is when the FDA approves a drug that ends up killing, you know, millions of people because of heart attacks or whatever, because oops, we didn't quite test that correctly, because the FDA agents are in the back pocket of the big pharma lobby in the first place. When that happens, what are you going to do? I mean, all you can do is, oh, well, we got to recall it now and we'll do better next time. Trust us, folks. But in a free market where there are private bodies that are doing this, if you put your stamp on something and it ends up, you know, killing a bunch of people or everyone gets fleeced, guess what? That stamp, that agent, that body, that government, that corporation is out of business. No one's ever going to trust them ever again. There is actual competition that's going on in that marketplace, as there should be. There should be competition in quote unquote regulatory functions that people think has to be a monopoly from the government. And I think that's fundamentally the point that could be the cryptocurrency space could be the space to show this idea in action before the SEC and whatever, the CFTC gets involved in this. Could there be actual private bodies that do this type of thing, that show, that prove the fact that there is spontaneous order that emerges in free markets?
I'm curious, when we talk about investing in cryptocurrencies, and we basically agree, and I don't mean you and me, I mean Americans pretty much agree that investments, there should be some sort of regulation of investments, all right, to minimize how badly people are getting fleeced. Uh-huh. But are we investing in cryptocurrencies, or are we gambling in cryptocurrencies in the same way we might be strangers standing around a roulette table, and you and I and Todd, the producer, we all happen to independently put our chips on number 7. We're all betting on number 7. We're not associated with it. Maybe 7 comes up, maybe it doesn't. But it's like putting all our chips. I'm putting my chips on Bitcoin. All right? Is that an investment, or is it a gamble? And if it's a gamble, should it be regulated? And if it is, should we how much regulation should we impose on the roulette wheels? And I mean, there's some down there that we can't, in theory, you can't fix them. But do you think there's a difference between gambling and investing, or should they all be the same?
Well, I would say that gambling is investing. Investing is gambling. There is an element to that in it. And I think people who are looking at the cryptocurrency space as an investment and are getting into it because, oh, I can make, you know, this percent of profit off of it, are in it for the wrong reason. And thus, I think they are going to be the ones who will be fleeced. Anyone who's holding Bitcoin right now because they think, oh, I can sell it for more fiat paper money in a year or two, they're the ones who are going to be the suckers who go down with the trade, as inevitably some of the stratospheric, incredible gains we've seen in Bitcoin over the past year are sheared off. There will absolutely be a correction at some point, because what is primarily driving the price right now is speculative hype, and the speculators are going to be cleaned out one way or another. In the exact same way, a couple of decades ago, there was the dot-com boom, where people suddenly started to get the idea, oh, there's this World Wide Web, and wow, it's going to change everything. So everybody, let's start investing in whatever comes along. Pets.com sounds like a great idea. Let's give them, you know, however many tens of millions of dollars overnight. It was a stupid, ridiculous, speculative bubble, and it did burst. And it left a lot of mess on the board after that blew up. And let's keep in mind that all took place within the heavily regulated IPO sphere, and so yeah. The regulators were looking after that, right? Mm-hmm. No, of course not. That was a speculative bubble. What's happening with Bitcoin right now is speculative hype, and it will burst. But just as the bursting of the dot-com bubble didn't take down the internet, like it wasn't the end of the web, it was the end of that stupid speculative period, there will be a bursting in the Bitcoin price that will be the end of that speculative period, but it won't be the end of cryptocurrency. So I think ultimately, again, the answer to this isn't going to come from government regulation. It's going to come from people who are being stupid and being speculative, getting fleeced and learning their lesson, and people who are serious about actually investing in a new technology that can do new things, being the ones who end up ultimately benefiting from this.
Okay, we're going to take a break for a couple of commercials, and I will be back with James Corbett from the CorbettReport.com in just a moment. Please stay tuned to Financial Survival.
I need to learn the golden rule. Won't you lay it on the line? I need to hear it just one more time. Oh, won't you tell me again? Oh, can you feel it? Oh, won't you tell me again tonight? Each and every
food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hi folks, I'm Alfred Addis, and this is Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. Our guest is James Corbett from the Corbett Report, CORBETT.com. We've got an article here from Cointelegraph talking about Bitcoin again. And the headline is, Bitcoin mining wastes vast amounts of energy, harms the environment. Can you explain Bitcoin mining to people and why this might be a problem?
Well, for people who don't know, the Bitcoin protocol is a proof-of-work protocol, which means that in order to mine, mine Bitcoin. I want to say create, but it isn't quite creation. Anyway, to the people who are getting new Bitcoin as it is being issued are doing so because they are performing cryptographic functions and solving hashes and this kind of thing. They're using computing processing power to basically solve mathematical puzzles, and as a way of securing the blockchain, the Bitcoin network, and as a reward for that, they get a share of the new Bitcoins that are being created and the fees that are associated with the block that they solve. Anyway, that's a lot of technological kind of mumbo jumbo for people, but the point of it is that essentially the Bitcoin network is secured through computer processing power. And at the beginning, of course, it didn't take very much. With a laptop, you could have been mining Bitcoin. At this point, obviously, it requires a much larger amount of computing power, to the point where we're talking about people who have these big server farms or computer farms set up with, you know, special rigs and everything so that they can mine the Bitcoin, and it requires a lot of energy. So what we're seeing is that anywhere in the world where there is any sort of a deal that people can get cheaper energy or use energy at a lower rate or whatever, that's where we see these miner farms popping up. So essentially, I mean, as the Bitcoin network grows and the computing processing power that's necessary for mining Bitcoin continues to expand, the sheer cost of the energy involved, the electricity involved in securing that network, becomes a real thing. So I don't know what it's at this particular point, but certainly one could imagine in the future, as the Bitcoin network expands and becomes even more than what it is today, it does require a lot of energy, and increasingly so in the future. And I take this so-called concern with the environment with a huge grain of salt, because I think mm-hmm. that a lot of this is really aimed for other reasons. As we talked about before, the potential of cryptocurrencies to undermine the central banking system is probably more to the point, and why these types of attacks get leveled.
Yeah, that's the environment they want to protect, is the banking environment.
Exactly. But, yeah. I mean, there's something to it. I mean, as Bitcoin expands, it does require a lot of energy, electricity, to secure the network.
I saw a report about 3-4 weeks ago. I didn't read the whole thing. I just saw that, just skimmed it. But they claimed at that point, it currently costs about $1,000 to mine in energy, to mine a single Bitcoin out of, I don't know, the internet, find it someplace, and however you do that. It was originally, I'm sure, that you could get, you know, it might cost you a dime to find 20 Bitcoin when they were worth a fraction of a cent. And now it's $1,000, according to that report. Do you think that's credible? Is that a credible estimate, or do you think
it's... I really have no idea what kind of math would go into that. It might be a rough estimate. But even so, I mean, from the miner's perspective, if a Bitcoin is trading at, what, $6,000 or whatever it is right now, if you only have to spend $1,000 to mine it, then, hey,
yeah,
it's worth it.
$6,000 cost you $1,000 to get six. Good deal. Can't complain about that. But it raises a question about the fundamental value of Bitcoin, because these guys are mining Bitcoin, not as if they were mining nuggets of gold, but in fact, they're more or less just cutting out digital paper dolls. I don't know that when they say they're mining it and this is their proof of work, I think they're just kind of spinning there. It's like a hamster in one of those wheels, just run, 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 and the wheel spins and it's all... It's kind of interesting, but nothing is really happening. Is my understanding roughly correct? And if it is that a fundamental vulnerability for Bitcoin when people find out they're not mining anything? They're not really, this is not supported by real work.
Right. So if the fundamental question is what gives Bitcoin its value, where does this value come from? It's just ones and zeros. That is an important question, and it really does go to the fundamental question about what is the value of really anything, and what is the intrinsic value? Because, of course, the gold bugs will tell you, oh, well, you know, gold is intrinsically valuable, and thus it is a store of money. Well, okay, that being what it is, then what's the point of Bitcoin? And, in fact, there are intelligent answers to this, and one of the most important, I think, is looking at Ludwig von Mises, in his Theory of Money and Credit, talked about the regression theorem about the value of money and blah, blah, blah. The long story short, this was encapsulated in an article on fee.org by Jeffrey Tucker a few years ago called What Gave Bitcoin Its Value? And essentially the idea is that there is a use value to Bitcoin. Why do people, I mean, what is its value? Well, it gives, people are able to use it in certain ways that, for example, they can't use gold. You can't do instantaneous international transfers of large amounts of money through gold. I mean, you would have to physically ship a bunch of gold somewhere and whatever, all of that kind of supply chain stuff. With Bitcoin, you can just instantaneously, and depending on the mining, the fees, it used to be almost feeless. At this point, there's problems with fees because of the size of the blocks and blah, blah, blah. But anyway, still a lot cheaper than you could ship gold. And that's a use value. There is a use to this type of thing. So that is, I think, fundamentally the answer. I mean, why would people spend this fiat money for this thing? It's because it can do certain things. It has certain functions and uses. Now that, I think, defeats the underlying idea of some people in the Bitcoin space that this is, you know, the digital gold, it's the digital store of value. So what you want to do is just collect as much of it as you can and just park it there. And, you know, 20 years from now, you'll be a multimillionaire. I think that is the exact opposite of what this is really about, which is if you just collect it and then just park it, it has no use value. It is not being used for anything, and thus it has no value fundamentally. If everyone who ever gets Bitcoin just sits on it, it's not going to be used for anything. And it's at some point, when people stop buying into it, as when the speculative frenzy is over, then it's over. It just disappears because there's no value to it. So I think the real value in the cryptocurrency space is its use functions. And to the extent that it is used and increasingly used in transactions, that is what underlies the quote-unquote value of it. And I think it will ultimately end up being less than what people are saying, oh, it's going to the moon, it's going to be millions of dollars per Bitcoin kind of thing, if this ends up panning out as an actual usable currency. Because, I mean, think about it for any currency. If it's so pricey that you can't even afford to purchase it, I mean, it's not that right away takes a big chunk out of its use value.
I've got, I'm looking for one article I had here, and apparently I didn't. Here's one, though, here's one of Cointelegraph again. It says, ICOs, our biggest scam ever, will lead to disaster, says infamous Wolf of Wall Street. Infamous penny stockbroker Jordan Belfort, better known as the Wolf of Wall Street, has reaffirmed his claim that initial coin offerings, ICOs, are the biggest scam ever. Earlier this year, he claimed that Bitcoin is a fraud. What do you think about that?
Well, as I said before, I think ICOs, I mean, there's obviously a lot of fleecing that's going on right now with very shady people coming out with very vague white papers and getting millions of dollars just because it's the hot new thing and people are looking for it to just invest and make money. And since that mentality is what is driving the ICOs right now, and people are not asking questions, they're just looking to make money. Clearly, this is going to end very badly for a large number of people. That's not to undermine the idea of the ICO itself. It's just the way that it is being used right now, and the fact that there's this speculative frenzy behind it. There are absolutely going to be people who get taken for all they're worth as a result of this hype, as with every bubble ever in the history of humanity. So I agree with that. But the idea that Bitcoin is a scam, ICOs are a scam, that there's nothing useful to them, again, is self-evidently incorrect. It's just a question of getting the speculative craziness out of the way so that people can actually use it for the function that it's meant to be used for. And that will involve pain, and there will be people who get, as I say, fleeced and taken for all they're worth. But, I don't know any other way that any bubble has ever functioned in the history of, the human race.
We talked earlier about the idea that there are a multitude of cryptocurrencies coming online, and everybody's build a better cryptocurrency and the world will beat a digital path to your doorstep, I guess. Are they going to publish a directory of cryptocurrencies, and will the directory be smaller than a phone book?
Well, I mean, in a way, the exchanges already function as a sort of directory. When a cryptocurrency gets listed on a big exchange like Bittrex or something like that, then it's kind of validated in a sense. So at least now you can exchange it for other cryptocurrencies or for fiat through if you jump through the 18,000 regulatory hoops. So in a sense, that's the type of, if there is any kind of stamp of approval, I guess, or some sort of central place you can go to look at the cryptocurrencies. There are other lists of the cryptocurrency space and by market share, this cryptocurrency has this much of the market and blah, blah, blah. Bitcoin's still the largest, but not quite as large as it used to be. It's now, I think, under 50% of cryptocurrency is in Bitcoin by market capitalization. So there are lists like that exist. But there are, as you say, there are so many coins that are popping up on a, seemingly daily basis at this point that a complete list, I don't know if there is an exhaustive list of cryptocurrency. I'm not sure if that would even be useful because it would just be a mind-boggling list of things that you probably have never heard of, and 99% of them you'll never hear again.
Here's another take on that, though. Here's something from a magazine called Hacked. It's not like the Gray Lady or whatever the New York Times Hacked, and it's probably far more relevant than the New York Times. It's got a strange, kind of a strange title. But in any case, the headline is Vitalik Buterin gives sobering take on tokens 1.0, but says next wave of cryptos will be better. Now that's interesting to me. Because what he's implying is that the current wave, Bitcoin and whatever else is out there right now, is just the first wave. That there's another wave coming that will be a higher technology, and it will iron out some of the problems we have with current technology. And there's a bigger, better cryptocurrency headed our way. Do you agree?
I haven't looked at his remarks in detail, so I can't really say what he's talking about here. But I'm not sure if this is necessarily that there's new technology coming out, but I think he's saying that basically people are just experimenting around with tokens and how they can be issued and what they're for, whereas the more immature market will develop its mechanisms for what this really should look like and how it can be used. And I think that's in line with what I'm saying with regards to, say, the dot-com bubble hysteria versus investing in online enterprises after the dot-com bubble. I mean, it's not like it's a different phenomenon entirely. It's just that there's a different motivation and different people thinking about it and working on it in different ways.
You're anticipating that whatever we see in future editions of cryptocurrencies may be different in degree rather than in kind. Is that what you're kind of saying or not?
I guess so, yes. I mean, I think perhaps...
You don't see another revolution.
Well, perhaps some of the functions of these cryptocurrency tokens and things that are being issued right now, perhaps some of the ways that that can be used still have not yet been discovered, per se. But I don't know if that's a technological revolution that's coming so much as just our understanding of what these things can be actually used for.
There's a quick question for you. If you had $100,000 to invest right now, how much would you put into stocks? How much into bonds? How much into gold? How much into cryptocurrencies?
It's funny. I mean, you might be asking the wrong person this because I have exactly zero in stocks and bonds. And my mind boggles at trying to think about, well, what company would I invest in? Because the only good answers to that from an economic point of view are investing in the exact types of companies and corporations that I don't want to support in any way. At all, in any sense. Okay. You will never go wrong betting on the military-industrial complex, but I'm not going to bet on it because that's not what I want to support. And same with basically any other blue-chip stock you can think of. So I don't play that stock market or bond game, and I don't support it ethically, let alone any other way.
So we're down to gold?
Yes, I mean, really,
my portfolio was sponsored by a gold dealer. So,
well, there you go. Well, my portfolio consists of precious metals and cryptocurrency, and I wouldn't I think I've bought one Bitcoin ever. All the Bitcoin I have and all the other cryptocurrency is a result of donations and things that I've made through the website over the years.
We're going to have to let it go with that, James. We're going to have to thank you for being on the program. We're out of time. Always enjoy talking to you. It's James Corbett from thecorbettreport.com. I'm Alfred Addisk. This is Financial Survival. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you and me and Melody and Todd, the producer, and James Corbett. Bye-bye.
I work all night. I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? Still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.